here tonight to share his experience, strength, and hope, we have Danny.
Thank you. My name is Danny. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, Danny. My childhood set the stage for my alcoholism. There are no good reasons to excessive drinking, but I thought I had a lot of good excuses. My father died when I was 5 months old. My mother went into a mental institution when I was about seven. And I can remember walking to school by myself after that and just crying my eyes out because I missed my mother. I also have a younger brother and sister. And when I got old enough to figure it out, I wondered where they came from. And my mother, obviously, after my father died, had two more children. So all this stuff, you know, I thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous, because I couldn't imagine, you know, going through life and not being able to talk about that stuff. So I accepted the shame of all that was happening to me. And through the program, I learned that it wasn't my shame. I was put in those situations by other people. That meant a lot to me. And I wasn't, you know, I wasn't going to drink. I saw what it did to other people. They got, they had fun. They got funny. Then they got goofy. And then they got in trouble. And sometimes they went away in handcuffs. And my grandfather, I won't call him an alcoholic, but he drank. He'd come home, fall asleep in the hedges, piss his pants, and drink there. You know, and he'd lay there until somebody woke him up. So all these things just always bothered me. I said I wasn't going to drink because I saw it happen to these other people, you know. And it didn't, I said I wasn't going to drink and be like them. I meant that. I always said that the first time I drank was a drunk. It was March 17th, St. Patty's Day. It was a week before I was to be 18 years old. I went to a hotel down in Tivoli, Bailey's, and they were all, it was gay Irish music. They were all dancing out on the porch and everything. It was a pretty warm March night. Well, it did get some wet snow after. Somebody invited me over, and they lied about my age. Oh, yeah, he's fine. So I drank. I don't know why I picked up that first one. But that night, I said something happened to me that night. That became my first solution to life. And I've always said that, you know, Don Knotts sat down on a bar stool, and three drinks later, John Wayne stood up. You know, I was, you know, and I wanted to capture that moment. I can still remember the jukebox in the place and everything that happened that night. I remember looking at that beer and saying, "Where have you been all my life?" And I tried every time after that to, I looked forward to the weekends. I knew I was going to do that again. I can remember walking home that night in the wet snow, and had about a mile to walk home, and nothing bothered me. I felt good. You know, I felt that first drink. My first drink was a drunk, and most of them thereafter. But it's like that knot that I was born with in my stomach, that knot was gone that night. It's like I felt that I was normal. I don't know, and like I said, every night after that, I try and to go drinking as often as possible. I look forward to Friday nights, Saturday nights, And Friday and Saturday pretty much when it started. I never knew what was missing. You know, I figured, you know, I needed a better looking girlfriend, and a newer car, a better job. And when I came in here, I found out that everything I was searching for was in here. It was like what I had was I had a spiritual void in my life that needed to be filled, and none of those other things filled it. So I first time I came in the program and or came into rooms, it was 1974. And I stayed around for 7 months, but nothing changed. Nothing changed in my life. And I was a know-it-all. I could bring tears to people's eyes. I was looking for people to stroke my back, you know. And that's all I was looking for. So nothing changed. By the time, 5 years later, I mean, I'm out drinking, of course, after 7 months, I came in the program. And by 1979, I told my sponsor, I said, my life is over. You know, I don't know what I'm going to do. I said, you know, I just don't know what to do, what to say. I felt like a little five-year-old kid cowering in the corner. He said, well, that's good. I said, what? He said, well, it sounds to me like you've given up. You know, you've reached your bottom. You've had enough. So I was working. Again, I had a few months in the program. My oldest daughter, Tracy, used to go over with me. 10 years old. And she used to go over with me to Kingston, the Tri-Bridge group. And I remember coming home, going over the bridge, and I was just thinking to myself, I was oblivious, this beautiful kid in the car with me. And, because I was thinking about poor Danny, you know, I was missing my drinking, but I was more or less, I was missing my extracurricular activities and when I was out there. And when I got home that night, my daughter, you know, I didn't even realize she's with me. It's all about me, you know. So we get in the kitchen. There's a little light on in there. And I said, you know something, Daddy? I said, what? Sent me out of it. I said, she says, ever since you've been in AA, I haven't cried once. It's like somebody stuck a knife in my stomach. I called my sponsor the next day. I said, I don't want to be like this anymore. That's when I started getting into the fourth step, looking at myself. You know, it was a long time before I was happy, joyous, and free. When I was drinking, happiness was a good-looking girl in a six-pack. As my progression went on, it was a 12-pack, and she didn't have to be good-looking as long as she stroked my ego, you know. It was all about my ego. It was insecure right from the start in my life. I can remember if I liked somebody, I'd have to find out and make sure they liked me first. But I would rather choose somebody who was only a five, and she stroked my ego, telling me how wonderful I was. It was all about my ego, you know. And it took me a long time to finally look at myself. the first step, I knew I was powerless over alcohol and my life was unmanageable even before I drank, you know. It seemed like everybody else in life got a manual on how to live. Somebody slipped me a Mad magazine, you know, so I just didn't know anything. He got me to he wanted me to do a four-step. There wasn't nobody going to know about them things. But he said, if you make out a four-step, don't sign it. Throw it on the floor. There's 50 people in the room. No matter which one you look up, when you look at, he said, it's going to be 99% going to look just like yours. There's so many things you can do, say, think, or feel, you know. He said, what do you think? You came up with something that millions of people on Earth never thought of before? It made me a little bit more comfortable. Then he sent me down to Graymore. I went to a retreat. And I heard, you know, I was the worst guy in the world when I got there on Friday night. And I heard guys in group talking about committing murder, robbery, rape. And I walked out of there Sunday feeling like a Boy Scout. So I got a little bit more comfortable about it. And when I finally did the fourth step, I did a fourth step looking at myself, of course. Fifth step, telling somebody else, he said, another human being. Well, I can be more than one. If I heard somebody talk and they had trouble with a certain area in their life, I talked to them. And then, you know, and I did part of it with a clergyman, part of it with my sponsor, and part of it with different people in the program. But I got it away, you know, got rid of it. The sixth and seventh step I had trouble with. And somebody said, well, go back to the first step. But I realized, I would go back to the third. I realized that I had to go back to the first step. My life was unmanageable. Yeah. But what I was, I found out that what I was trying to do with the unmanageability, my defects really came out, was when I would think somebody, I had a better idea of how somebody else should live, you know. Everybody's got free will. So once I kind of stopped doing that, I had a lot less trouble. And my seventh step, of course, humbly ask him. That's not an action step. I think that whoever wrote the steps, it was the fifth step, whatever you say in that, was, when you get through with the fifth step, there's so much we can humanly do to get rid of those defects. Six and seven, I have to ask God to take over that, you know, help me with that. The eighth step, making out a list of all persons we had harmed, and make amends to them all. My sponsor told me you had to put everybody down there. I did it three times. He handed it back to me. I said, well, yeah, except the people I might hurt. He said, no, everybody's got to go down there, and you have to be willing. Whether you do it or not, we'll talk about it. But you have to be willing to do it. So I gave it to him again. And he said, is everybody down there? I said, yeah, except the people that have passed on. He said, what does it say? He said, everyone. And you have to become willing to make amends. I said, okay. He told me, he said, write a letter to him and take it to the grave. Take it to the grave and do your amends there. I said, they won't hear it. He said, no, but he said, you will. I did what I was told. I don't know how God's world works. I don't know how AA works, but I know they do. I walked through the stone gates with tears in my eyes, and 1,000 pounds were off my shoulders. I don't know how it worked. I don't have to know how it worked. I just know that it does, and that would amaze me. Ninth step, doing it with people that were still on this side of the grass. I was afraid to start it. I have never had a bad experience with that. The most people that I thought really hated me, I went to them, and they said, "No, Danny, we always loved you. We just didn't know what was wrong with you." I said, "Well, you and me both." And they just told me to keep on doing what you're doing. And I went to my 20th high school reunion when I was really early in the program. And I thought they didn't care about me, the fact that, you know, that I didn't graduate. I had to take the other course after I got out. And they were all telling me how much they cared about me. See, we were so upset. She wouldn't give me 3 points on English. That's why I flunked out. But I had enough honesty even at that time. And I said, "No," I said, "I was a screw up." I said, "Yeah, I didn't deserve it." You know, so, but there, if I hadn't followed through with the steps and told people these things, I would have never known how people felt about me. I would assume, when I thought they hated me, and I found out they said they'd love me, I was amazed. And, but if I hadn't done that, I would have never known how other people felt about me. It was always about, you know, it's the way I felt about myself, I found out. And I thought everybody else felt that way. I was amazed. 10, 11, and 12, 10th step, my first sponsor said, I had a little problem, me and my wife had a discussion. And he said, "Why you gotta apologize?" "Well," I said, "I'm not in the 10th step yet." He says, "Okay, you can go to that 10th step anytime." So I had to go home and apologize to her. And he said, and "Don't use the word but." I said, "Okay." So I went home and did what I had to do. And I came back to him. He said, "Did you use the word but?" I said, "No." I said, "I did use the word although." He said, "Of course, the alcoholic will find some way around it." But the thing was, he said, "You may have believed you were right, but telling your wife to put her spaghetti where the sun don't shine, it doesn't cut it." So he said, "When you do something, whether you're right or wrong," he said, "how you handle it is whether you're right or wrong." And I didn't. And the 11th step, to me, the essence of the 11th step is all about the prayer of St. Francis in the 11th step. It doesn't have anything to do with me. Every bit of that prayer tells me to do different things to make a world a better place. And treat people different. Forgive them. And so on. 12th step. I've done some 12 step work. And first couple times, my sponsor, I told him, I said, it wasn't a successful. He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Didn't change. The guy didn't come." He said, "Did you get drunk?" I said, "No." He said, "Then it was a success." So I learned these things little by little. A lot of these things I'm talking about, it took me a long time to finally get it. I first came into AA, I was unique, of course. I was different than anybody. Oh, I'm so bad. And I found out that, you know, there's a little bit of good in the worst of us, a little bit of bad in the best of us. You know, we're pretty much normal. All I ever wanted to be was normal. After I did my 5th step, I felt normal. You know, I just felt like I was a part of AA and part of the world. Sponsorship is a great thing. I needed people. I talk to people, my sponsors. I've talked to other people that may not have been my sponsors, but, you know, I fellowship with a lot of people. I still do that today. My greatest asset, or the fellowship in the room, is of Alcoholics Anonymous. My greatest asset. People, you know, I told people that if I had 1 hour left to live, I'd want it to be in an AA room and with my people, because I'm not going to get away with anything in here, you know. You treat me the same as you always did. And I meant that. I really meant it. So I can't, a lot of things have happened where my higher power, which I choose to call God, has got me through. You got to wait. You have to wait, you know. Sometimes the answer is yes, sometimes it's no. Sometimes it's wait, I got something better coming for you. A lot of things that I wanted when I was drinking and I first came into the program. Later on, I thought to myself, boy, it's a good thing that didn't happen. I really didn't need that. So my best life today is when I just get out of the way and let things happen. You know, 99% of what's going to happen is going to happen anyway. That 1% is how did I accept it and react to it. Lost my brother recently too, and that was that was not easy, but God got me through that too. I think he took him pretty quick. God took him home, and I count it as a blessing now. It depends on how you look at something, you know, and that's the way. So, I love the program. People in here don't know how much I love them. You can't put that stuff into words. You know, you just don't know. So, that's enough out of me, and I'll hang it up with that.
Thanks, Sam.